It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
I'm Stuart Vonnie.
I'm Harris Faulkner.
I'm Brian Kilmeade, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Monday, December 5th, 2022, I'm Mike Emanuel. A new era begins on Capitol Hill in about a month, when House Republicans return to the majority with new legislative and oversight priorities for the next 2 years.
We have to make sure that in social media and other communication techniques that you can't pick winners and losers based on your politics, or for that matter, any other thing except illegal activity. And that's got to be the standard.
I'm Chris Foster. There's a national drug shortage, including the most commonly prescribed antibiotic, amoxicillin.
We didn't see this coming, so we got flat-footed as a country. Half of our antibiotics in the United States come from China and India, and so this is calling for more domestic production right now.
And I'm retired Major General John Ferrari. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
With Republicans preparing to take the majority in the House of Representatives, there will be oversight hearings on some topics the Democrats in Congress ignored. Congressman James Comer of Kentucky, who's expected to be the next House Oversight Chairman, is raising concerns about what he argues is evidence the Biden campaign colluded with big tech to suppress the Hunter Biden laptop story late in the 2020 campaign.
The laptop proves evidence that not only did Joe Biden lie to the American people about his involvement with his family's influence peddling and shady business deals, it also proves that Joe Biden was a part of those shady business deals. And that's something every American should be concerned about.
Some of the fuel for this story is from new Twitter CEO Elon Musk promoting a series of tweets by journalist Matt Taibbi that revealed the company's internal deliberations over how to handle the Biden laptop story, suggesting Twitter was biased.
Democrats were not censored and left causes were not censored, but right causes and Republicans were. And I think this is frankly obvious to anyone who uses Twitter.
House GOP leader Kevin McCarthy is signaling a desire to dig into Biden family business dealings when potentially he'll be the new speaker.
What Elon Musk has been able to do, now we know why the White House wanted to fight so strongly against him owning Twitter. All he's done is put out the truth. Now we need to start looking at Facebook, at Google.
With some Republicans suggesting it was a failure by both Twitter and the mainstream media, to be fair.
The one thing that we see with the mainstream media is they want to treat it as old news rather than covered up reporting.
Daryl Issa is a Republican representing California's 50th congressional district.
I mean, the fact is the mainstream media was very willing to accept this as, you know, Russian misinformation or any other excuse to not report it. And now that we've discovered that it was intentionally stifled by, quite frankly, the Department of Justice in concert with social media, they don't want to cover that story. But that's the largest story of our time. If you can eliminate the reporting of valid news, or for that matter, kill anything you don't like, then why are we any different than China, Russia, or Iran?
Should there be consequences for big tech social media companies sitting on the story, crushing it?
There has to be, and for two reasons. We've gone through this in our history in a couple of ways. Obviously, there was a time in which newspapers reached a point where they could determine who was going to be the next president and put their thumb on the scale very successfully. But all the way in the back, in the beginning of antitrust, when we looked at the railroad magnates and other people who controlled the levers of the Industrial Revolution, we discovered that we had to regulate them. We had to keep them from picking winners and losers. So just as a railroad doesn't get to say that one guy's ore can be on the vehicle and the other can't, we have to make sure that in social media and other communication techniques that you can't pick winners and losers based on your politics, or for that matter, any other thing except illegal activity. And that's got to be the standard.
You recently spoke to Apple CEO Tim Cook about the need for greater tech security and information suppression, among other things. How did that conversation with him go?
It went well. We were candid. There were tense moments when we talked about things like his taking Parler off. And without admitting that that was a mistake, he made it clear in his words that he would not put the thumb on the scale, that he would be like Switzerland, neutral in every way. And that promise is the one I want to keep him to. I can't look at the past as much as I have to judge him based on going forward of whether Apple has learned from a pretty egregious mistake of picking people to delist off the Apple Store for reasons other than a completely valid one that may exist.
You guys are heading for the majority starting in January. What kind of oversight should we expect from a Republican-led Congress in terms of big tech?
Well, there's going to be a robust oversight. Jim Jordan, who's a veteran of both Judiciary and the Oversight Committee, James Comer, who's now had 2 years of being stifled as the minority leader on the Oversight Committee, they're geared up, they're ready, and if I can say something with some pride, they both are staffed with some real veterans, people who have been in the majority, the minority, have done some of the most robust investigations, Fast and Furious, Benghazi, and the like. So they have the people, and they've already asked for retention of documents. They intend to have the production of that information practically on January 3rd be issued. As soon as they have subpoena authority, I'm sure they'll be pushing for each of them.
Which investigations are you most looking forward to? Which do you think will be most fascinating for the American people and really shine a spotlight on some critical issues?
Well, I think there are three actions this administration that we need to look at. The Department of Justice thwarting the dissemination of the truth in the case of Hunter Biden is critical to our democracy, and that leads us toward the social media companies. The actions at the border and the complete unwillingness to obey laws, fighting with the Supreme Court not to do what they could do to protect our borders. And then, candidly, the abuse of power. You know, this president has been told, and he's appealing all the way to the Supreme Court, that he can't give away nearly $1 trillion in loan forgiveness without an appropriations. But he has been spending money in a number of ways that was never authorized by the Congress. And good fact-finding investigation, not just by the committees I mentioned, but by the Appropriations Committee, is going to be essential. The American people deserve to know that they're not going to have trillions of dollars of their grandchildren's money continue to be misspent.
I'm curious, after observing the leadership of House Speaker Nancy Pelosi for many years, obviously I know you don't agree with her on issues, but her leadership style seemed to be keeping Democrats convinced that if they were unified, they could get things done. It seems to me that Kevin McCarthy and the leadership team on the Republican side need to convince your fellow Republicans that if you stick together, you can actually get some things done.
Oh, absolutely. Kevin has the difficult job, along with Steve Scalise and others, of getting those who are on the left, in other words, as close to Democrats as a Republican can be, and those who are on the right, who sometimes sneer at more moderate or centrist Republicans. You've got to get them both to realize that our common goals will only occur if we're granted, particularly on appropriations. We can either pass an appropriations bill with a six-seat majority, or Kevin can be forced to go to the Democrats, in which case we don't get the kind of legislation that any of us would be proud of.
I know Kevin McCarthy has worked tirelessly to get back the majority. Obviously, Republicans were hoping for a red wave, but now he's cobbling together, trying to get that 218 votes he needs on the floor in January to become the next speaker. Does he get there?
He does. There are just a handful of people who will hold out for a round or two. But at the end of the day, you can't beat somebody with nobody. And the fact is, there's no one who can get over 30 or 40 votes that's willing to run. So at the end of the day, we're going to have Kevin McCarthy as our speaker. And you mentioned Nancy Pelosi. The fact is, Nancy Pelosi wielded power and she distributed it. Now, that meant she distributed none to the minority, but Kevin has already said that many of the tools she used, it's fair. to turn them around and use them exactly the same. So some of the rules that the Democrats are going to live under are exactly the rules that Republicans live under. And that's going to empower the Republicans to do a lot of things that we didn't do the last time we were in the majority. And I'm looking forward to that. That includes the ratios on the committees and many of the rules. We're not going to simply go back to being nice guys. And we're going to use some of Nancy Pelosi's techniques because they worked.
Do you think Pelosi, Hoyer sticking around, not in leadership, makes it harder for the young leadership on the Democratic side? I mean, I realize that's not your concern, but, you know, having a former speaker kind of sitting over your shoulder would seem to me might be a little awkward at times for Hakeem Jeffries.
Well, I've been a chairman with the former chairman sitting right by my side, so I know exactly the feeling, but I don't believe that's what's going to happen. I think that both will find places. They're both from safe districts. They'll find places, such as the suggestion that Nancy Pelosi be the ambassador to Italy. Mm-hmm. And I believe that those parachute ripcords, so to speak, are going to be pulled. But I'll tell you, there are some challenges. That new leadership doesn't have, for example, Steny Hoyer's willingness to work across the aisle in support of our strong ally, Israel. And that does mean that there may be a shift further away from support for some of our allies. And that concerns me because Steny, for all of his faults, and Nancy, for all of hers, in certain areas, we've been able to work together. And that was one of them that worries me a great deal right now.
Finally, after covering you and covering Capitol Hill for a long time, I know being the minority party basically is the worst. Even though it's going to be a slim majority for the Republicans, how relieved are you to have an opportunity to be back in the majority?
I'm thrilled. You know, people sometimes look at how much legislation you can get passed when the president and the Senate are the other party, rather than looking at the ability to change the hearts and minds and the understood facts on the ground between oversight, control of what comes to the floor, and ultimately what is allowed to be sent to the Senate. We have the ability to show real leadership. At the end of the day, the president and the Senate will force a lot of compromises we don't like, but only after we're able to show what the truth is. And I believe strongly you can get a better bill if you can tell the American people what the truth is, especially on spending.
Congressman Darrell Issa of the great state of California, grateful for your time today. Have a wonderful week.
Thanks, Mike. Take care.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is retired Major General John Ferrari with your Fox News commentary. Coming up.
Some commonly prescribed medications are in short supply at some pharmacies, like the ADHD drug Adderall and the antibiotic amoxicillin.
We are seeing unprecedented medication shortages right now. We're having a historic shortage of things that we commonly use to treat kids with respiratory infections, like liquid amoxicillin, liquid ibuprofen, liquid acetaminophen.
Jason Blowett is pharmacy director at Presbyterian St. Luke's Medical Center and Rocky Mountain Hospital for Children in Denver. This mom, Justinia Vargas, is in California.
I went to two CVSs and then finally found some at Safeway. It was a challenge. Yeah, so we kind of resorted to like cough drops for kids versus medicine.
Viral respiratory infections are up nationwide.
I do think this year is different. We're dealing with the so-called tridemic of COVID plus RSV plus flu.
Dr. Ted O'Connell is the chief of the Department of Family and Community Medicine at Kaiser Permanente Vallejo in California. Those infections can't be treated with antibiotics.
Unfortunately, parents demand antibiotics for their kids with viral infections. And right now we've got a lot of RSV and some influenza going around.
Dr. Marty McCary is a Fox News medical contributor and a professor at Johns Hopkins University.
It's a bad viral season right now for children. We have an overuse and we have an undersupply problem. We didn't see this coming, so we got flat-footed as a country. Half of our antibiotics in the United States come from China and India. And so this is calling for more domestic production right now.
Are there any moves toward that? I mean, I know that the Biden administration has talked about trying to bring production back here more. If that happens, can it be ramped up? And what happens to drug costs?
There's almost no meaningful efforts to onshore pharmaceutical manufacturing beyond a few small efforts by a couple groups like the West Family Foundation. Mark Cuban has an endeavor. President Trump attempted to tackle this and called for the domestic production of pharmaceuticals. The pharma industry launched a massive ad campaign against him. And some believe that's one of the reasons why the vaccine and monoclonal antibody announcements were postponed until a few days after the last presidential election. So there's not good blood between those who call for domestic production and the pharma industry.
Amoxicillin, what we were talking about with the kids getting sick, largely. What about Adderall? That is that being overprescribed or is it being underproduced or both?
Mostly overprescribed and a steady supply of it. Kids are using it at epidemic proportions right now. COVID poses essentially no risk to healthy kids. Adderall does. Adderall is used by about half of students in graduate programs, including, ironically, medical schools. We live in an impulsive culture where people want a quick fix, and so they want to be able to live their lives, hang out, party, do their fun stuff, sports, and then pop in an Adderall and get more time to study overnight. And unfortunately, that drives a lot of it.
People who really do need antibiotics or really do need Adderall, are they being shortchanged? What happens if your local pharmacy just doesn't have it? What do you do?
You use other antibiotics, which may not be as good. Pharmacies across the United States are reporting scrambling for amoxicillin. There's actually 124 medications in the United States right now considered in the short supply category as officially defined by the FDA. They have a running list. And shortages of medications have been an increasing problem. The reason we're so concerned as physicians are that antibiotics save lives, and we take for granted that infections are controlled. Before the advent of antibiotics around the time of World War I, many women died from routine childbirth from infections. Children died from ear infections, things that are now treated routinely. So this is not just a concern, it's a growing problem that is getting very little attention.
Speaking of overprescribing antibiotics, how dangerous is it in terms of creating more and more dangerous bacteria?
It is the next pandemic, and it's not going to hit us quickly. The pandemic of multi-drug-resistant bacteria, or what we call antimicrobial resistance, is a slow-growing pandemic. It's not going to surge one day out of the blue like COVID did. It is taking more and more lives each year. It's been about 100,000 lives, for example, 3 years ago in the last tally, that died from multi-drug-resistant bacteria. And there are estimates that by the year 2030, we could see as many as 1 million people die worldwide per year from these superbugs, bugs that are resistant. One of the big drivers is the overuse of antibiotics in agriculture. Up to half of antibiotics are used routinely in agriculture for no good reason. And another reason is that parents are demanding antibiotics for things that they don't need. Doctors are overprescribing. In one CDC study, 40% of antibiotics prescribed in the United States are totally unnecessary.
I mean, I get that parent, you know, your kid's sick. You think, you know, you want to do what you can do. Is this patient ignorance or parental ignorance? Is it doctors just misdiagnosing or not bothering to diagnose? Or is it doctors just saying, whatever, here's your antibiotics?
All of the above. One big frustration we have as physicians in the United States is the short 10-minute visit. People come in sometimes with a consumerist mentality, demanding an antibiotic or some outcome of their visit. And so prescribing when somebody's demanding it and is about to write some Google review of their satisfaction level of the visit, it creates a perfect storm for overprescribing. And the reality is that we don't understand the microbiome, that is the millions of bacteria that normally line the GI system. When you take antibiotics, you are throwing TNT into that equilibrium of the microbiome, and that can have some downsides long term, especially with children. Again, antibiotics can save lives, and sometimes they're essential, but we should not be prescribing them when they're not necessary.
Let's talk about what's going on with COVID, the flu, RSV. Everybody predicted that this was going to be a rough time coming out of COVID, where a lot of people weren't around, people weren't getting sick. The flu season was basically non-existent for a while, and now it's raging back. Are they compounding each other, or are they just distinct illnesses?
We think there may be some viral interaction between viruses, but it's not what the some of the media are calling a tridemic, because COVID is not really contributing to hospitalizations right now at any meaningful level. What we're seeing is a massive influx of influenza and RSV infections in the hospital, particularly RSV in children. Now, we knew we were going to have a bad flu season coming up and a bad RSV season at some point. We didn't realize it was going to come this early in this calendar year, and we didn't realize RSV was going to rear its head up after it just did last summer. Right now, a lot of people are suffering from these infections, and if you need an ICU bed as an infant for RSV infection, sometimes you have to be transported to another state. That's how full many hospitals are. Now, many say the reason for this surge is what we call immune sheltering. That is, the immune system has not been exposed to low-level pathogen exposure over the last 2 years of lockdowns and masks. And others say it's perhaps just sort of the randomness of these seasons rearing their head up.
Speaking of COVID, some new research came out. We've talked a lot about long COVID and people who very genuinely are having problems months and months and months after infection, brain fog and whatever other symptoms there are. This new research says that it may not be distinct to COVID, really, these problems.
Yeah, a big study this week in our top journal, JAMA, shows that long-haul symptoms at 3 months after infection are no different from COVID infection as they are from any other upper respiratory infection. And we know that some people seem to be uniquely affected by COVID. That is, they have paralysis of their arms or extremities. And it seems to be something unique. Maybe it's the COVID antibodies cross over and attack your nerve cells. We don't really know. But there clearly is something called long COVID. But this study found that it's not that different from any other infection where 3 months later you can have fatigue and some symptoms. And many of us are frustrated because we have spent as a government $5 billion at the NIH on long COVID research, which has yielded zero, nothing. And it turns out that long COVID from this study is really no different from long-haul symptoms after other infections. Makes sense. If you're sick, it takes time to bounce back. You can have fatigue, you're deconditioned. And there are, in the control group, there are people who did not have COVID who continue to have these symptoms at 3 months. It's also consistent with the UK study. 1.4% of people after COVID had long-haul symptoms, and it wasn't that much higher than the control group in their study.
Christmas is coming. What do you tell patients about a schedule for vaccine boosters?
So right now, the White House is pushing hard the new Omicron bivalent booster vaccine. And many of us have been saying it may make sense for high-risk individuals who have not had Omicron. That is, if you've not had COVID this year, and you're high risk, maybe it makes sense. But we don't have clinical trial data that's public. And without that, it's hard for me as a physician to make a strong recommendation, especially in healthy people and young healthy people, and in people who have had Omicron this year. But that is one option for people. The White House bought 171 million doses of this new bivalent vaccine, but have only had 35 million used by the American public. 90% of the American public have said no thank you to it. Otherwise, common sense practices. People need to recognize we should never go back to the days where you show up at work and you're coughing or sneezing or slobbering next to the person sitting next to you. If you're sick, either stay home, or if you have to go to the pharmacy or somewhere essential, wear a high-quality mask to prevent your droplets from infecting other people. Masks have been highly politicized, but a high-quality mask and one-way masking can be effective when you're sick.
And that's just not for COVID, right? I mean, what are the chances that with any regularity, people started adopting masks for stuff like a bad flu season?
That's right. It's not just for COVID. Masks have been used by those of us that work in hospital settings for decades to when we have a patient with tuberculosis or they have an infection and we don't know what it is. When somebody is sick, you don't know what the infection is. Many of these infections are not tested for. So in general, if you have symptoms, we need to use better common sense practices and hygiene. And I would encourage people to respect those who choose to wear a mask. I may look at a 22-year-old waiter and say they're wearing a mask because they have bad information or there's been fear-mongering. But the reality is we don't know if they are immunosuppressed or at risk. And so we need to respect those who choose to wear a mask during an active viral season.
Dr. Marty McCary, Johns Hopkins University professor and a Fox News medical contributor. Dr. McCary, good to talk to you. Thanks.
Great to be with you, Chris.
Here's a look at the week ahead.
Tuesday is Georgia's U.S. Senate runoff election. Incumbent Democrat Raphael Warnock is facing a challenge from Republican Herschel Walker. The runoff was needed since neither candidate got 50% of the vote in last month's midterm elections. Also on Tuesday, President Biden is scheduled to fly to Phoenix to tour a semiconductor manufacturing plant under construction. Wednesday is the final day for Medicare recipients to make coverage changes for the upcoming year. Social Security officials say making the right choices could save hundreds of dollars in medical bills. Thursday, spending time at Disney World in Orlando will be getting more expensive. Disney's implementing a park-specific pricing on one-day, one-park tickets, making Magic Kingdom the most expensive park to visit on its busiest days, with prices ranging from $124 to $189. Saturday, the NCAA will announce its Heisman Trophy winner for the year. The finalists will be announced on Monday. And that's a look at your week ahead. I'm Rich Dennison, Fox News.
Jason in the House, the Jason Chaffetz Podcast. Dive deeper than the headlines and the party lines as I take on American life, politics, and entertainment. Subscribe now on foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you download podcasts.
Rate and review the Fox News Rundown on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen.
It's time for your Fox News commentary.
John Ferrari.
What's on your mind?
With the midterm elections over and nearly a quarter of fiscal year 2023 complete, it's critical that the White House and Congress reach several deals in the lame duck session. High inflation, the war in Ukraine, an assertive China, and depleted munition stocks have never made it more urgent to get funding for our national security institutions authorized and appropriated. Our elected leaders need to do four things. Enact the National Defense Authorization Act, otherwise known as the NDAA, pass the appropriations for fiscal year 2023, set aside additional aid for Ukraine's defense against Russia's war, and eliminate the threat of debt ceiling default. Accomplishing these tasks is an extremely difficult task, yet the American people, our warfighters, and yes, the entire world deserve no less from our elected leaders. First, our military needs the NDAA to be enacted quickly. Hundreds of authorities and necessary changes reside within this bill. Second, our government and the military need appropriation bills to be passed. With war waging in Europe, no new appropriation means we cannot buy weapons and munitions to the levels needed. That will hurt our ability to defend our country and reinforce our NATO and Pacific region allies. Third, Congress must appropriate funding for the next year to continue to provide vital aid to the Ukrainians in rolling back Russia's invasion. Passing a full year of funding for Ukraine's war effort would bolster the morale and fighting spirit of the brave Ukrainian men and women who are fighting every day, knowing that munitions and weapons they need will be coming. Finally, the continued threat of not servicing our national debt has become a perennial flashpoint in Congress. Most agree that defaulting on our debt would create a global financial catastrophe, and with the world recovering from the pandemic, a shock of this magnitude could easily produce unrest around the world and embolden China to act even more aggressively. Until the new Congress is seated, the House can pass a debt limit extension. In the Senate, the majority leader will need to find 10 Republicans to pass the extension. Certainly, the Office of Management and Budget should be doing the political calculus to strike a deal to get this passed and taken off the table until after the 2024 presidential election. Each of these tasks is difficult. Taken together, they may seem impossible. However, as the saying goes, if you want to solve a hard problem, make it even bigger. Nobody likes the monstrous omnibus bills that have everything in them but the proverbial kitchen sink. But with only 30 days or so before potential gridlock in the new Congress, it may be time for one last big bipartisan push to get the defense NDAA passed, fund the government, keep the Ukrainians armed, and avert a global financial catastrophe by passing a debt limit increase. Our elected leaders owe no less to the American public, our warfighters, and really the entire world. China is watching. I'm retired Major General John Ferrari.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. And now, stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Kilmeade. I want you to join me weekdays at 9 a.m. East as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and, of course, what you think.
Listen live or get the podcast now at BrianKilmeadeShow.com.
This is Jimmy Failla, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a 3-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at FoxAcrossAmerica.com.